This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Yesterday, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice announced that the U.S. would join negotiations with Iran if Iran suspends its uranium enrichment program. It was the first time that Washington signaled a willingness to talk with Tehran since the hostage crisis 27 years ago. Both Secretary Rice yesterday and President Bush, speaking earlier today, made it clear that if Iran decides not to accept the offer, the U.S. and its European allies will ask the U.N. Security Council to impose economic sanctions. Iran's response to the offer has been mixed. Its foreign minister insists that Iran will not give up the enrichment program, but his statement did not rule out the possibility of talks with the U.S. Today, Secretary Rice meets in Vienna with top officials from Russia, China, and the so-called EU3, that's Britain, France, and Germany, to work out a package of incentives if Iran agrees to abandon pursuit of nuclear weapons. Iran maintains that uranium reprocessing and enrichment are part of a peaceful nuclear energy program, and it's right. The change in American tactics follows the public letter that Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad addressed to President Bush 3 weeks ago, and pressure from Europe and from former secretaries of state to join negotiations on Iran's nuclear ambitions. Later on in the program, Motley Fool Dave Gardner answers your investment questions about the rundown on the stock market, the new Treasury Secretary, and robotics. But first, diplomacy with Iran. If you have a question about what's happened this week and what it means, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And we begin in Iran with Khusra Naji, a correspondent for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. He joins us by phone from his office in Tehran. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Is mixed a fair description of the Iranian government's response to the American offer?
I think mixed is a little bit optimistic. My own impression is that generally the initial reactions have been somewhat negative. For example, Iranian foreign minister today was speaking welcoming the statement by Secretary Rice, but at the same time saying that Iran will not abandon its enrichment activities. The same message comes from the spokesman for the foreign ministry here, saying that there's no problem with direct talks based on mutual respect, but the condition, he said, no conditions. We will enter talks without any conditions, without any preconditions, I should say. So it doesn't look too good from here. And we've had also hardline newspapers here saying that this offer is not worth the paper it's written on. Pretty negative.
Pretty negative, then. Has there been discussion among intellectuals on the street? Is there buzz about this?
Not really, not much. It's not big news here in Iran. The state-owned radio and television, for example, they've been preoccupied with the anniversary of the death of the founder of the Iranian Islamic Republic, the revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini. And they've been having programs about that, really. It's not big news, although many newspapers here publish the news and headline the news without much comment. The only comment was from this hardline newspaper saying that this is a ploy to get Russia and China on board. It's nothing to do with Iran, and Iran will not abandon its enrichment activities. On the street level, there's not a lot of information. Many people didn't know about this even because it's not big news. Mm-hmm. And generally it seems that when you talk to them, and when I ask them today, for example, whether they want to talk to the U.S. or not, their opinion is pretty divided in a sense that some people say that, yes, why not? We can talk to anybody so far as our interests are secured. And some other people are saying that, no, we've had enough from the U.S. and the United States cannot be trusted. So some people are negative. But generally, my own impression these days, reading the newspapers, listening to the radio and television here, talking to the people, is that I get the impression that it's sinking in that the consequences of sanctions on Iran are going to be serious, and that has made people think again. And I see more and more articles and more interviews in which Iranians are saying that let's talk to the U.S. Maybe we can resolve our problems through talks.
So you're hearing some anxiety about the possibility of the sticks in this offer that the United States is preparing with its allies. Is there interest in the carrots, the other side of this, if there are inducements offered to Iran, and including, and this has not been specified as yet, but there's a lot of speculation about it, light water nuclear reactors?
I think the carrots depend how big these carrots are. The incentives that the Europeans and the U.S. may be offering Iran has to be pretty big, really, if it's going to make any difference, in a sense that the Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and Iran's spiritual leader Ayatollah Khamenei, they've been pretty much against any backing down on this, and the rhetoric that they use make it basically impossible for the government here to back down, unless, as I said, the incentive is very, very big. And I don't know what that can be. You mentioned the question of a water reactor. That's not big enough for these people. And I heard Secretary Rice yesterday mentioning something about nuclear energy, peaceful nuclear energy program, or some nuclear power plant. Maybe these things can be part of a package. But so far as I can see, the rhetoric is so hardline here that makes it difficult for the government to back down.
Khosrow Naji, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Khosrow Naji is a correspondent for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, and he joined us by phone from his office in Tehran. Washington's offer to negotiate was, as we heard, tied to a condition that Iran has recently been unwilling to entertain, that is to suspend its uranium enrichment program. Until yesterday, it was looking just as unlikely that the U.S. would ever consider negotiating with Iran, at least directly. Joining us to analyze the evolution of U.S. tactics on Iran is John Alterman. He's director of the Middle East Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He joins us today from their studios here in Washington, D.C. Nice to speak with you.
Good to talk to you again, Neil.
Is this an important shift in U.S. policy?
It is an important shift. It marks a departure from the U.S. position, which had been to really stay out of the direct negotiations with Iran. And at this point, we're really just suiting up for the game. It's not clear we're going to play the game. It's not clear how well we're going to play the game and how well the Iranians will play. But we're suited up. We're there. And that, by itself, changes the whole mood, changes people's sense of possibilities of where this whole deal could go.
Well, some people are even questioning the sincerity of this offer, suspecting this may be, make them an offer that you know they'll refuse.
It would have shocked me if the Iranians had accepted the offer at the beginning. But now that it's on the table, it seems to me that puts in place a whole series of other steps. What I would expect to happen is that the Iranians would start talks with the Europeans, with the U.S. out of it, and then as that process builds confidence, then the U.S. could come in. Iran could do any number of things along the way to suspending or something else with their current enrichment activities. They could say they've reached a natural lull. I mean, there are infinite numbers of ways to finesse this if you want to. And the key issue now is seeing if the Iranians want to, and the Iranians are going to sniff around and see if a deal like the deal they'd want is possibly on the table, and what the alternatives to negotiating might be.
And I guess we should explain, you're going to be hearing a couple of terms of diplomatic art through the rest of this program. The EU3, and we've mentioned that's Britain, France, and Germany, and the P5+1, which is the five permanent members of the Security Council, throw in the United States, China, and Russia, of course, along with Britain and France, plus one being Germany. They're included because they're part of the EU3. It gets complicated, Jonathan Alterman.
Well, and the Germans, of course, like to not talk about the P5+1, but the EU3+3, because that gives them a full position as part of the EU3 as opposed to the add-on, because they have a rotating seat on Security Council right now.
All right. Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and we'll start with Pear calling from Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, earlier in the program, you started out with a clip from George Bush talking about how the world is united and all that, and I don't see the world is united. Obviously, China and Russia are not very willing to go along, and, you know, let alone the rest of the, you know, members of the United Nations. So where is this unity coming from?
I think the president said that the world is united on the idea that Iran having nuclear weapons is a bad idea. Jonathan Alterman, it's a long way from that to, as Per suggests, being united on the idea of invoking sanctions on Iran.
Yeah, I've spoken with Chinese and Russian diplomats, and let me tell you where I think they come out. They really don't want to see conflict with Iran. And the more they see us as the ones leaning toward conflict, I think the more they're going to side with Iran. And the more they see us leaning away from conflict and the Iranians leaning toward conflict, the more they're going to side with us. And the question for American diplomacy is, how can you use that dynamic? How can you use the desire of countries like China that are totally dependent on global energy markets for their economic growth? How can you use their fear of conflict to build an international coalition that creates greater incentives if the Iranians cooperate and greater pain for the Iranians if they don't cooperate?
Per, is that to clarify it?
Well, sort of. You know, for what it's worth, my prediction is that Iran will kind of back away and they're going to go ahead with start selling oil for euros and things like that. I think that's the real issue.
All right. Per, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about Iran's nuclear ambitions and the U.S. offer yesterday to join the EU3 in negotiations with Iran about those nuclear ambitions and how to contain them. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The Bush administration says it will talk with Iran about its nuclear ambitions if Iran stops processing and enriching uranium. Iran says it welcomes dialogue, but called the offer a propaganda move and said it would enter talks only with no preconditions. Our guest today is John Alterman. He's with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Of course, you're invited to join us as well. If you have questions about the developments with Iran this week and what this means, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. As we mentioned earlier, there is discussion of a package of carrots and sticks, inducements for Iran if it's willing to verifiably stop development of nuclear weapons, if indeed that's what it's doing, and a package of sanctions if it does not agree to enter these negotiations. Joining us now to discuss the Iranian reaction is Shaul Bakash. He's Clarence Robinson Professor of History at George Mason University. He's with us here today in Studio 3A, and thanks very much for coming in on a beastly day here in Washington, D.C.
Nice to be here.
What did you make of the Iranian foreign minister's response to Washington?
Well, I think it was expected because the Iranian red line, as it were, has been that it has to have the right to a domestic fuel enrichment capability, and the American condition for joining the talks, that is Iranian suspension of fuel enrichment, I think it was predictably unacceptable to the Iranians.
But in the larger term, does Iran want the United States to join these discussions?
The Iranians have indicated for some time that they want talks with the Iranians, with the Americans, sorry. And it is a fact that some of the inducements that the Europeans are planning to offer Iran would not be credible without an American endorsement, such as security discussions, such as the sale of nuclear technology and a light water plant. So both the Europeans have felt that America has to be on board, and I think the Iranians have indicated for all sorts of reasons they'd like to talk to the Americans.
Mm-hmm. John Alterman, let me ask you, is the U.S. decision announced yesterday by Secretary Rice, is that a response to pressure from not just from Europeans, but from former secretaries of state like Henry Kissinger and Madeleine Albright?
There certainly was a growing sense that that the U.S. would have to engage in some point. I think partly the decision was that there's not a real harm in doing something to just see if it works, while the U.S. might pursue other policies as well. The Europeans were really, really, really adamant that the U.S. had to engage, and I think it became very, very clear that we weren't going to get either the Chinese or the Russians on board to any sort of policy against Iran unless we at least showed the willingness to begin engaging. And quite frankly, President Ahmadinejad has been absolutely successful scoring propaganda points, most recently with his letter a couple of weeks ago, which made him look very, very good in the eyes of the world and made the U.S. lack of response seem like we didn't have an answer.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you, Professor Bakash, in his remarks yesterday, also the President of the United States, to some degree, he didn't say they were responding to the letter, which they regard as a bit of a slap. But nevertheless, the remarks were addressed to the Iranian people as much as they were to the government of Iran.
Well, I think both the President's remarks and the Secretary of State's remarks reflect the horns of the dilemma on which the U.S. sits, partly of its own making. It has to adopt both a hardline position and also a more conciliatory one. And I think striking the right balance between these two has proved very difficult for the U.S. And as we heard from the correspondent in Tehran, Khosrow Naji, the hardline tone in Washington is not exactly helpful to making the offer of negotiations credible.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line. This is David. David with us from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yes. Hello, good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon.
And guests. I'm curious. I guess one of the things that I have trouble with here is elevating this. And I will assume, for sake of argument, that this is actually a nascent nuclear weapons program. That is not necessarily the case, and there is a case to be made for a dual energy structure for Iran and the idea that they would like to sell their oil and have nuclear power for their population. But just for the sake of argument, let's assume that this is a nascent nuclear weapons program. I am troubled with the elevation of this program to an existential threat with respect to the United States. This administration has done this with Iran, it's done it with North Korea, and it's done it in a number of other instances as far as what constitutes an existential threat to U.S. security. The simple fact is this: there is one country that presents an existential threat to the United States, and it has for over 50 years, and that is Russia. They have thousands of nuclear weapons that could be targeted on this country before this radio program is over. And the idea that we would not sit down with Iran because we have many of these preconditions that we would like to impose on them, there's an arrogance here. And I'll tell you this, I'm a hawk. I do not want to see Iran with nuclear weapons, but I also do not want to elevate them to a status that they do not have and do not deserve.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you first, Jonathan Alterman. Yesterday, Secretary Rice did use that phrase that you look out for in diplomatic language, vital interests of the United States.
About two-thirds of the proven oil reserves in the world are in the Persian Gulf, or the Arabian Gulf, depending on which side you're looking from. The U.S. doesn't so much import a lot of that oil, but all the oil is tied together in international markets. The reason Iran matters is that it is in an incredibly energy-rich part of the world, and its behavior over the last 30 years has been destabilizing to friends of the United States. So the issue is not only could those bombs hit the United States. I think they don't have the ability to launch missiles. If you want to talk about what could they smuggle on a ship, it's a whole separate set of issues. The immediate issue is that Iran is a destabilizing power in American eyes in a very, very, very strategically important part of the world, not only for the United States, but for all of America's allies as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's fine, except that we have for, again, over 50 years, not only protected ourselves through deterrence, but we have extended a nuclear umbrella over our allies. And up until fairly recently, that was related to, it was simply limited to Europe. I do not see...
And Japan.
Right, right. And I just don't understand why extensions of that umbrella, not only the nuclear deterrent, but our conventional deterrent, could also be, those kinds of security guarantees could not be made to our allies in the Gulf to ensure the security of petrochemicals or petroleum shipped out of the Gulf. You know, we've had these running, you know, semi-conflicts with the Russians in the Persian Gulf, in the Mediterranean over the years, and none of them have resulted in a shooting war. And the simple fact is that I don't see why those security guarantees that we are perfectly capable of rendering cannot also be rendered to our allies in that region. It is true. It is a destabilizing influence that Iran is trying to present. But that said, it is not something that cannot be remedied, and I'm not sure that elevating their program to a status that it really does not have yet and probably will not attain is the right approach.
Shaul Bakhash, I wanted to get your input on this question.
Well, I think the caller raises a good point in that Iran is still many years away from acquiring a nuclear weapon, if that is its intention, that Iran is very unlikely to try to use such a weapon against the United States or maybe even in an offensive way. But it is a fact that it would be a destabilizing new element in the situation in the Persian Gulf. It might cause other Persian Gulf states to want nuclear weapons of their own. Israel obviously feels this would be an existential threat to it. So I think there's good reason to try to dissuade the Iranians from seeking nuclear weapons if that is their intention.
Indeed.
And there's also a real estate problem.
Go ahead, John Offerman.
There's also a real estate problem, which is a lot of these countries are very small and very close to Iran. So you don't have the ability you have in the United States to really shoot down missiles on their way over. In many cases, you have ports, and when the port's obliterated, the whole country's obliterated. I mean, Kuwait after a nuclear bomb is nothing. Yeah. There's nothing left.
Yes, but I think that really is not putting the problem in the right context. The idea that Iran would fire missiles or nuclear weapons at a nuclear bomb at its Persian Gulf neighbors, I think is so far-fetched as not to be realistic. The problem is that an Iran with nuclear weapons would perhaps exercise its diplomacy more aggressively, would throw its weight around much more aggressively and so forth. So it's a destabilizing element, not because Iran would fire nuclear weapons at its neighbors, but because it would make Iran a much stronger and more less predictable power in the Persian Gulf.
David, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, Neil.
Let's turn now to Fath. Fath calling from San Diego.
Hi, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I was just to say that I don't believe that the United States is very serious in talking with the Iranian government or Iranian people. I believe that they try to somehow cover the problem that they already have in Iraq, because as far as I know, the regime in Iran always lived on the crisis that they deal with the other side of the world, especially United States. If you see after the revolution, the question in United States was, who lost the Iran? And then after that, the regime in Iran go to the hostage crisis. After the hostage crisis, there was Salman Rushdie's crisis. There was war, 8 years bloody war between Iran and Iraq. And now, after we have about 8 years so-called being democratized by the last president, we have another president that somehow represents the pride of Iranian people. Let's say that let's see that Iranian people, how they see it, the problem, nuclear problem or energy problem or whatever between United States and Iran. The people in Iran somehow are proud that at least somebody find out in their history that he can stand up against the big superpower of the United States.
And now, Well, let me just ask Professor Bakash. Clearly, the rhetoric from President Ahmadinejad has been very hard line on this question. At this point, does he have any room to crawl back to accept American conditions or some fudge of American conditions?
Well, he certainly, you know, as the speaker has suggested, his rhetoric has resonated with at least an element in the Persian population. But I don't think the Iranian position on the fuel enrichment issue has changed all that much since the last administration. Iran has always said that it won't give up a right to fuel enrichment. Ahmadinejad tends to express this position in much stronger terms. But it really has been the consistent Iranian position on this issue.
We're talking about Iran nuclear ambitions and the offer yesterday by the United States to join negotiations. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I wanted to ask you, John Alterman, a lot of this has to do with bringing the Europeans along, yes, but we talked earlier about bringing the Russians and the Chinese along as well. Is the United States looking for a win-win position? If the Iranians agree, that's great. If they don't agree, well, at least we look like we've made every effort.
There's certainly some people in the administration who adopt that view. There certainly doesn't seem to be a lot of downside risk involved in this either, but it's my sense that the real shift that's occurred is a shift from the people who said we're going to solve this problem to the resignation that we're going to have to manage this problem. And when you make that conceptual shift, it has a number of implications, and one of them, I think, is that when you have an opportunity for multilateral negotiations, you have to engage in them.
And some people would point out that similar negotiations are underway, stuttering and stopping in that way with North Korea. But nevertheless, nobody has asked North Korea to stop nuclear enrichment or even construction of nuclear weapons as a precondition to those talks.
Well, and the other thing is I think people are missing the fact that this is not the first time we've had face-to-face discussions with the Iranians. We reportedly had a lot of face-to-face discussions with the Iranians in Geneva in 2002 over Afghanistan. Now, granted, that was a difference because we were largely on the same side, and on the specific issue of proliferation, we tend to be on opposite sides. But that's an example in this administration of speaking face-to-face with the Iranians in a purportedly multilateral framework, but people understand that the real people who have to be in the room are the Americans and the Iranians, and oftentimes people leave the room and these negotiations go on or are very, very constructive. So it seems to me this all comes out of a context. In many ways, it's not a new administration policy. It's the administration returning to its policy before 2003.
Let's get Joe on the line. Joe calling from Miami.
Hi, thanks for having me on your show. I guess I have a general question for you. I have a sense that the U.S. is in a lose-lose situation in dealing with a known state sponsor of terrorism. On the one hand, we all know that terrorism organizations and state sponsors of terrorism use misinformation in a very, it's a very, very, very good tool used to mislead people. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, they understand our decision process is limited, and they kind of understand the democratic loopholes. And so while we're debating and talking about should we talk to them, should we negotiate with them, they're progressing on their nuclear plan, and they're really close to getting there. Now, the bad part of it is that while time goes by, they're progressing, and if we do, at a certain point, do intervene, then a very big tsunami of terrorism is going to hit the world and is going to hit American interests all over the place. I have a question for you experts there. What do you think Mr. Ahmadinejad did in Syria, another state sponsor of terrorism, when he visited a few weeks or months ago and met there with Mr. Imad Mughniya, which is a fellow we should really be focusing on?
Yes.
Some experts is even a more dangerous guy than Mr. Bin Laden. What do you think those guys two were doing, if not just having the timing and the perfect organization for the wave of terrorism.
And Joe, I'm going to have to cut you off to give Professor Bakash a few seconds to respond. And indeed, Iran certainly is looking for divisions to exploit here.
Well, certainly Iran's support for Hezbollah and its elements in Lebanon is well known. It's no secret. Nothing new about Iranians meeting Lebanese opposition elements in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, of course, you know, the U.S., having taken a very hardline position on this issue in the beginning and having had to retreat again and again, also expended valuable time, which it might have picked up on earlier, to address Iran's
The man problem. You referred to, Mr. McNeil, is not an opposition figure, but a terrorist. But anyway, more on this later. This is NPR News.